During his inaugural address 1 week ago today, President Bush set out a bold vision for his second term.
So it is the policy of the United States to seek and support the growth of democratic movements and institutions in every nation and culture with the ultimate goal of ending tyranny in our world.
Some analysts wondered if that particular line signaled a daring new direction in the president's foreign policy, a Bush doctrine. To clarify, the morning after the president spoke, various administration officials explained that ending global tyranny was an ideal, a top priority, but no necessary reason to hurry. Well, for this next segment, we want you to come up with your own subtle clarifications for famous speeches, orations made by real or fictional figures. Maybe they went a little too far to strike the right rhetorical note or the dramatic flourish. How might JFK or James Dean or Margaret Thatcher or Madonna backtrack on some of their memorable lines? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And we have stolen this idea from Hannah Rosen of The Washington Post, who offered a few examples of clarifications that might have been in the style section of that newspaper. She joins us now from a studio at The Washington Post here in Washington. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Well, begin with a couple of those examples. I mean, I guess I already quoted your post hoc revision of the famous Patrick Henry speech.
Yes. Well, I was just trying to think, what are the grand words that we know, like the meek shall inherit the earth? And so one of them that I did was Jesus. No one needs to go turning over their inheritance to the meek tomorrow morning. This is a generational process, not the work of a couple of years. So just to think, if you could revise your speeches the next morning and kind of tone them down, what would they sound like?
If these figures had handlers.
Exactly. If they could sort of drown their large words in bureaucraties the next morning just to sort of calm the panic, what would it sound like?
We have an email from David Coates in Plymouth, Minnesota. It was not my intention to disrespect or in any way belittle those who experience the fear of heights, say, or the boogeyman, speaking in public, that sort of thing. There are indeed other things to fear beside fear itself, and I deeply regret any pain I might have caused by suggesting otherwise. That, of course, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Interesting, you had your own take on that.
I did have. I said, so maybe there are a few other things to fear. Wolves, snakes, heights. I myself have been known to shriek at the sight of a spider. But I like the caller's version because it adds some of that I feel your pain element that would
Clintonian, maybe.
Common in the Clinton era, exactly.
Yes. You also wrote in the article, interesting, you know, that it's easy to get carried away under those circumstances. I mean, there you are with the standing in front of hundreds of thousands of people, the flag snapping in the wind, your hand on the Bible. Rhetorical flourishes come easily under such circumstances.
They really do. And, you know, it might have come as a surprise to many, like it did to me, to hear Bush use such language, hunger in dark places, the longing of the soul. It's a kind of idiom that he doesn't often resort to. So it was interesting to hear him use it.
Email that we got from John Golden at Grand Valley State University at the Department of Mathematics. MacArthur's I Shall Return, clarification. If we win the war and if I can get a good airfare and that whole FDR thing, you know how he is. I mean, if it works out, you know? Whatevs. We're talking with Hannah Rosen of The Washington Post about famous backtracks of history. You're invited to join us, of course, totn@npr.org or 800-989-8255. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's a couple of others we've gotten on email. Lincoln seems to be a favorite. This one from Frank Wolftange in San Diego, listens to KPBS, he says. It is for us, the living, rather to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. That, of course, from the Gettysburg Address, providing, of course, that Congress approves a supplemental appropriation for that purpose.
That, you know, I tried hard with Lincoln. I tried with Gettysburg in the second inaugural address. But Lincoln's style is so sort of understated and dark that he doesn't do a lot of that kind of big rhetorical flourish. So I admire the reader for trying. I really couldn't do Lincoln as I tried.
And yet you found scope in Moses.
Well, I mean, that was a pretty big, momentous speech that Moses gave, so that one wasn't too hard. Moses was, we did talk, but the Lord our God did not specify what he meant by covenant. He did not say whether you had to follow one or five or all 10. He could have meant it more like a list of suggestions.
Well, a la carte, if you will, yeah. Catherine Whitbeck in Marlborough, Massachusetts, sent an email. This should be credited to my eighth grade English teacher, whose name escapes me at the moment, who taught at R.J. Gray Junior High. René Descartes' famous quote, made a little less unequivocal, I think I am. Now, an easy one is Winston Churchill. I mean, how could you pick just one from Churchill?
Right. I was thinking, you know, blood, toil, tears, sweat. Could you add on a few more things to that?
We'll fight them at the beaches, but maybe not the suburbs.
Right, exactly. Then he had victory at all costs. And I thought, well, maybe not all costs. You know, could you tone that down a little bit?
The one you finally chose, though, was okay, so not quite an Iron Curtain. I meant something more like pewter.
Right. That was sort of an apology to the Soviet Union there, kind of reaching out his hand, if you will. Tone it down a little bit. I could have used another one I thought of was, you know, the Reagan one, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. You know, is there some way to tone that down? Maybe you can take a few picks at it or, you know, kick it, if you will, but you don't have to actually tear it down.
Let's get a listener on the line, and Murray's calling from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Hello.
Hello, Murray.
Yes, the one I thought of, first of all, was when John Lennon said the Beatles were more popular than Jesus. I have no idea how he could have said that any different, but it seems to me like I'm sure he wished he'd have said it some other way. And I'll listen to your comments.
Okay.
Well, now you would probably say my polling shows that the Beatles are more popular than Jesus or something like that. You would qualify it.
Maybe he would have said, I really meant to speak about Jesus Ezuahe, the ball player who's now at the Toronto Blue Jays, and we're much more popular than him. I don't know. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. Steve is with us from Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, hi, how you doing?
Okay.
I was thinking of more of a contemporary artist like Roger Daltrey.
Ah, the lead singer for The Who.
Yeah, singing I Hope I Die Before I Get Old. And I've heard him talk about how he's got to still do that when he's in concert, and it's not very fun anymore.
I bet it's not. I hope I die before I get really, really, really old.
Right.
You know, you're reminded of Muhammad Ali's famous question. Somebody once asked him if he was worried about getting old. He said, worried? I hope to die of old age.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Here's Lauren Rapp, an email, and this from she's citing Kermit the Frog, saying, well, it's okay being green sometimes. I mean, like when you want to hide in the grass or you need to pretend like you're nauseous.
Right. I hadn't thought of music lyrics. You could really go a long way with music lyrics. You know, maybe I can get some satisfaction, you know, if you pay me more. And, you know, but you could. There's a lot you could do with lyrics.
You were sticking, though, pretty closely to great orators of history. John F. Kennedy, for example.
Yes. John F. Kennedy was. In response to many of your anxious queries, I would like to assure you that we will still be taking complaints, requests, demands relating to what this country, and my administration in particular, can do for you. In fact, today I would like to announce a new toll-free line, 1-800-MY-NEEDS, to be up and operational by next week.
And again, going for the little Clintonian aspect there, I think.
Right. That was more Clintonian, sort of, you know, I feel your pain, believe me. It's not all about what you have to do for this country. Don't worry.
I guess it's a modern malady that anybody who says anything ringing enough for a lot of us to listen to it will have handlers who will spin it the next day.
Right. I was trying to think if there's any famous examples of when people have backed off explicitly from large speeches. There was no new taxes. Now, that was a pledge that he had to back off of, but not rhetorically. Or I did not sleep with that woman. That's mm-hmm. another one that had to be backed off of.
Yeah, editors said, he did back off that. Here's Scott Kordemeyer in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Joe Namath, after guaranteeing a Super Bowl win for the Jets against the Colts in Super Bowl III. I mean, well, yes, we probably are most likely win. We have a chance, but, you know, that Unitas guy is awfully good. And finally, Nathan Hale, I didn't really mean give my life for the country, more like lend it out with the expectation that it would be returned in reasonably usable condition. It's not too bad. That one also came in. Hannah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hannah Rosen is a writer for the Washington Post Style section. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.